Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Friday, June 2nd, 2023. On today's episode of the show, we are going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
All right, Jacob, before we get into the news today, we have an announcement about the future of the show.
Yeah, due to the needs of Slash Film, due to resources being stretched in different directions, Slash Film Daily is undergoing some rebranding, undergoing some changes. Starting next week, Slash Film Daily will become the Slash Film Show, and instead of being a daily show, it will run twice a week. Slightly longer episodes, a little bit meatier episodes, going into, you know, more news items per day. But it is going to mean, you know, Slash Film Daily is a daily bite-sized podcast. You know, we'll be phasing into a slightly longer, twice-a-week show that will still cover all the same things we always have covered. Same rotating people, Ben will still be hosting, but we'll have a new name, and it will, you know, just be published a little bit differently. So this is not, you know, this is not like a decision that was made lightly. It's purely about, honestly, the economics of it will bore you. Just know that this is not something we did casually. It's not something that, we did it on a whim. And I know this may, people listening to us for, you know, it's a daily show for, goodness gracious, 6 years now. You know, we appreciate everything you've given to us as listeners, and we hope to maintain a level of quality that we've always given to you just twice a week now.
Yeah. And speaking of quality, Jacob, one thing I'm excited about with the going down to two times a week thing is now we might be able to add sound effects into the show. We might be able to have a little fun, mess around with some more serious topics at certain times.
We were talking about Christopher Nolan getting sexy.
That's true. So anyway, you know, there's some customizable options here now. So I think, you know, as we're transitioning into a new era of the future of this podcast, we can, you know, have a little bit of fun with it too. So stay tuned for that if you've been a longtime listener.
And, the Slash Film Show.
Yes, indeed. All right. So let's get into the news here. You mentioned Christopher Nolan. The news from, I think this was from yesterday, is that Oppenheimer, the new Christopher Nolan movie, is going to be rated R, which doesn't really sound like much until you realize that this is actually going to be Christopher Nolan's first R-rated movie in 20 years, which is kind of, a milestone moment in a certain way, because he's become, you know, arguably one of the dominant filmmakers of the past two decades. And he's been doing so in the PG-13 space. And now Oppenheimer is going back to his sort of like R-rated roots. What do you think about this, Jacob?
A few things. One, Oppenheimer's reportedly 3 hours long. It's a World War II era biopic. It's a major IMAX release targeted toward an adult audience. Even before we knew it was R-rated, you know, 13-year-olds aren't excited for Oppenheimer. And it's, to me, clear evidence that Universal bent over backwards to get Christopher Nolan in their camp. After Nolan broke up with WB, it is, you know, he went hunting from their studio, and Universal clearly said, we'll throw money at you. What do you want? As long as you do a one for us, one for them type thing. I don't think Oppenheimer gets made as an R-rated 3-hour long movie unless Universal's desperate for the next Christopher Nolan, like traditional blockbuster after this.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting, too, because this movie is rated R for, quote, sexuality, nudity, and language, which is fascinating because I think one of the, criticisms that's been levied against Nolan as a filmmaker is that he's not a particularly sensual filmmaker, I guess. Like, sexuality has not really been at the forefront of any of his storytelling in any sort of meaningful way. And, like, maybe this marks a pivot in interests for him, or maybe this particular story just has that built in as part of the framework or something. So just sort of like a notable difference from what people, I guess, have been used to seeing from Nolan movies for the past 20 years.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call Nolan's films asexual, because that suggests, you know, a lack of interest in sex, whereas Nolan's films have tipped their hands at sex and romance, but they've always been chased to the point of being a non-entity in them. I mean, does Batman do more than hold hands with any women in Christopher Nolan movies? I don't think so. I mean, it's not, there's like, I'm joking, I'm exaggerating, but Christopher Nolan has not been a sexy filmmaker. He's no Wong Kar-wai. So yeah. It's one of those cases where if Oppenheimer is, this movie set during a backdrop of a war, is not radar for violence, but for language and for sexuality, I'm legitimately curious what that looks like. I wonder if Nolan heard the criticisms, if he said, you want sexy Nolan, here we go. And I want to, my question to you is, Ben, do you think that, not to get off on a tangent, but do you think Christopher Nolan's past films haven't been sexy because he's just not been interested in that subject? Or is it because his story simply didn't call for it?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? It's so interesting because filmmaking is such a personal thing. Obviously, there's like, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of voices and collaborators that go into these things. But we tend to like ascribe authorship to this one person. And in this case, no one, I think his like, you know, filmmaking style is such that it sort of supports that that sort of auteurist reading. So we ascribe like intentions and meanings and like, you know, personalizations in a way that maybe we wouldn't for other filmmakers too. Yeah. So
this is especially true for Nolan though, because let's compare him to another filmmaker who I think is a very good filmmaker. Let's say James Mangold. He's on my mind because of Indiana Jones right now. Mm-hmm. James Mangold makes really good movies. I've enjoyed more Mangold movies than I have not. He did Logan, Ford v Ferrari,
Copland,
the remake of the 310 to Yuma. Mm-hmm. Really, really good filmmaker. But he's the kind of guy who shows up, reads the script, says, okay, I can make this, and then delivers on the project that's in front of him. He's a real John Ford type in that way. John Ford, I think, despite, you know, having similar interests in visual flourishes, was a filmmaker who throughout the, you know, from the 30s through, I guess, the 20s through the 60s, was able to like step up to the plate in a variety of genres and deliver like knockout films that, you know, didn't necessarily bear his distinctive touch at all times, even though you can get more granular than that. I think that Mangold's working in the method of the old school Hollywood operator guy who's like shows up and does the work and does it well. Mm-hmm. Whereas Nolan, despite being a guy who makes massively successful blockbuster movies, is, you look at his work and they're the same trends repeat themselves. He's interested in like five or six things and they come up over and over again. It's not a bad mm-hmm. thing. Stanley Kubrick was also interested in five or six things. They come up over and over again. Hitchcock, interested in five or six things. Come up over and over again. So Nolan invites his comparison. If you told me that James Mangold made a sexy movie, I go, oh yeah, that makes sense. He made Kate and Leopold, which is a rom-com, but it makes sense. He's shown interest in romance before, mm-hmm. whereas Nolan simply hasn't. So Nolan, you brought this upon yourself, good sir.
Yes, definitely. All right, let's talk about Ted Lasso, the future of Ted Lasso. I'm bound by the strictures of time for this episode. I know that like we can't go so long. I so want to have like a separate conversation with you about the end of Ted Lasso and what you think about that. But I guess let's table our reaction to the actual potential series finale. We don't even know because Apple has been so vague about that. But let's address the possible future of Ted Lasso. So Brendan Hunt, who is a writer on the show, and he also is an actor. He plays Coach Beard. I guess participated in a Reddit Ask Me Anything session yesterday. And somebody said, what is the most ambiguous way you can answer the season 4 spinoff questions? And he responded, my pat answer that is also 100% true is we don't know. We need a break and we will take one presently. Nothing has been ruled out. Everything is possible, but that includes the possibility that we're done. We won't know until we've sat with it for a while, decompressed, etc. So my understanding is that Ted Lasso, in its form that we've seen it, was always pitched as a 3-season show. It's so strange, Jacob, that Apple TV Plus and I think Warner Brothers TV, which is the I guess TV studio that produces the show, nobody has officially said as of this recording right now, which is Friday, you know, June 2nd, nobody has officially said what the future of this show is and whether or not the episode that debuted earlier this week is actually the series finale or not. There's been a lot of talk about possible spinoffs, but nothing has been like officially confirmed. So what do you think about these comments and what do you think about like what the future of the show could be or should be?
Could be is one of the spinoffs they clearly seem to be setting up in the finale. There are several threads planted, relationships that I feel like they've deliberately disentangled or have set up in a quick shot I feel like, you know, spin-off potential that don't even have Ted in them. We see Keeley pitch, you know, silently a female football team to Rebecca, her boss. We see Roy Kent and Jamie Tartt's friendship turn into a rivalry again. We see all these things where, like, you can see the potential, you know, wacky spinoffs happening in the margins. So I think Ted Lasso is done. I think that Apple's being serious about wanting to do spinoff shows set in the Lassoverse, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you don't want to dwell too much on the finale, but the entire state of season 3 thinks that the Lassoverse has run its course. As somebody who thinks that seasons 1 and 2 are remarkably good, after season 3, I'm done. I'm done with these characters. And it would physically pain me to try to watch them be harmed more.
Wow. That is strong. Because I was wondering if, like, maybe a spinoff might be the sort of, like, breath of fresh air that this show might need, you know, where, like, the idea of, like, not having the weight of expectation that that the show really found itself burdened with after that wildly successful but surprisingly successful first season. Maybe removing that element from it might actually open the show up in a way, that the new spinoff up in a way to, I don't know, like, have some more, take some more creative risks or maybe actually, like, settle into a groove in a way that the original show never did, because it felt like so, like, ambitious beyond its reach in a way that, I think rubbed me the wrong way and seemed to have rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But yeah, maybe we'll have, like, a full on Ted Lasso episode coming up in the weeks to come or something like that. But
you wrote an article on the site explaining where you think Ted Lasso season 3 went wrong, isolating on one character. I know you don't want to talk about it too much, but do you feel like the people, like, let's say Bill Lawrence, the original showrunner, can't return at all? He's too busy with Shrinking, a show that was very well liked from the same people who enjoyed Ted Lasso.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he doesn't come back. Let's say it's the same people currently running the show who are tasked with coming out with Ted Lasso spinoffs. Do you want to see those?
Well, the thing is, the people who are currently running the show, from my understanding anyway, and again, I'm not, like, super deep into, you know, knowing every single nook and cranny of what happens in that writer's room, but Jason Sudeikis was the person sort of, like, who took over as, like, the sole showrunner in the third season. And the whole reason that the show, I think, has come to an end is because he doesn't want to be overseas anymore. He wants to come back to the United States and live with his kids, which is totally understandable. So I think the idea that, like, the spinoff would be creatively shepherded by Sudeikis doesn't seem, you know, he'll probably get, like, a vanity EP credit or something like that, but it does not seem like the most likely outcome to me. I'm guessing the creative voice would come from somewhere else.
Do you think so, Brendan Hunt, maybe?
Maybe, or Brett Goldstein, who I think was, like, one of the, he plays Roy Kent on the show, and he was also, I think, a showrunner in the early days, definitely part of the writer's room, and maybe even, like, a co-creator of the series, certainly, like, the key creative voice. So maybe he would take the reins, and that might be an interesting thing. So, I'm not ready to, like, fully close the book on this universe, but season 3 certainly left a bad taste in my mouth. So, like, yeah, I'm very glad that, like, the saga show, if you will, is done, and then maybe the spinoffs will now begin. But I guess before we continue into the world of spinoffs, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
All right, so speaking of spinoffs, Jacob, we have to talk about my favorite news story of the week, which is that Dwayne Johnson has announced that he is going to be returning as Hobbs in a new standalone Fast and Furious spinoff movie. So I think you enjoyed Fast X to some degree, right? I think you and I were like a couple of the people on Slash Film staff who enjoyed that movie, right?
Yeah, we were both pretty high on it compared to a lot of people. We both really liked it.
Yeah. So that movie, for, I guess, spoiler alert for Fast X, which people probably know already, but Dwayne The Rock Johnson returns as Hobbs in the post-credits scene for Fast X and sets up the idea that he's returning to this franchise in a pretty major way. So in his announcement earlier this week, he said that he's going to appear in this standalone movie that is going to serve as a bridge between Fast X and its sequel. We don't know who else is going to be in the movie. We don't really know even if Jason Momoa's Dante, the villain of Fast X, is going to appear in this sequel. He teased Hobbs facing off with Dante, but said something like, but that's for down the road. And I wasn't clear if he meant that's for down the road when this movie, this standalone film, begins production, or if he means for, you know, Fast 11, basically. But there's so much interesting stuff to parse here, Jacob, because, like, obviously the feud between The Rock and Vin Diesel has been legendary over the past several years. The idea that he would be coming back at all means that, speaking of gaps being bridged, that certainly happened for him to come back in the post-credit scene of Fast X. Now he's getting his own standalone movie. There's no mention of Jason Statham at all. So there's a lot to think about, to parse here. What do you make of all this?
I guess my number one question, Ben, I'm very curious about your thoughts on this. Was the Vin Diesel Dwayne Johnson feud real, or was it, as the wrestling term goes, kayfabe, an act to build tension and suspense?
Man, there was a period where I believed that it was all staged, because I just thought there was too much money to be made, and like the idea of drumming up stories from behind the scenes and, like, you know, keeping the Fast and Furious in people's minds even when the movies weren't in theaters, it just made so much sense. And the idea that Johnson obviously comes from the world of wrestling, like, he's, you know, I think you and I both believe that Dwayne Johnson as an actor has become, like, wildly uninteresting over the past several years. But as a public figure, he certainly knows how to, you know, stay in the limelight and, like, you know, keep the spotlight on him. And I think for a long time, I thought, okay, this is all just an act. But I've heard enough stories now of, like, people being genuinely frustrated with Vin Diesel behind the scenes that I think I've changed my opinion and changed my tune to thinking that, like, those two genuinely did, you know, almost, if not come to blows, then, like, you know, go head to head and have their spats and all of that kind of stuff. I think all of that was actually real. And then I think the realities, as Ryan mentioned on one of the previous episodes of the show, like the realities of Black Adam not performing nearly as well as The Rock hoped, and you know, Jungle Cruise not performing, you know, to the degree that I'm sure he wanted, probably necessitated and sort of led to this, what is now being billed as like a triumphant return to this franchise. But I would guess in an alternate universe, if those other projects, you know, blew up and in a big way, Dwayne Johnson would have been very content to just sort of say goodbye and never have to deal with Vin Diesel again. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, let's just say that I've heard enough Vin Diesel stories to believe he's a difficult pain in the ass. I don't say anything that's going to get me fired. But buy me a drink sometime in person and I'll tell you some Vin Diesel stories. And also, I've heard stories about Dwayne Johnson saying that no matter what you feel about him as an actor, I am certainly unimpressed by him recently. He shows up and he does the work. He's a hard worker and he takes things very seriously, and he is personally invested in his projects to a degree that some people may think is unhelpful. So they're very, very different styles of actor, very different styles of human being. So I 100% believe it's real. I really do. I think that maybe they'll play it off as kayfabe and you know, be buddy by the red carpet. But I think you just watch what happens. You watch Dwayne Johnson not appear in Fast and Furious 9 and go off and make a series of films that don't do well. And he hyped Black Adam in a massive way. That movie was, it's not a disaster. I think the headline saying is that it's one of the biggest bombs of all time. It are wildly overstated, but it is very much a disappointment. Nobody at Warner Brothers is happy with Black Adam, and nobody is happy with how Dwayne Johnson pushed his weight around on that movie. I think what this means is that Dwayne Johnson's reached a point where, you know, his personal brand is still strong. If he, you know, gets paid $1 million Instagram posts, I mean, you know, he's going to be fine for the rest of his life. But, you know, his movie career has tanked a bit. People like The Rock. They don't like The Rock movies, but they like Fast and Furious movies. And I think that Dwayne Johnson rightfully realizes that the strongest point of his career was when he was, you know, playing foil to Vin Diesel in the Fast and Furious movies, because I don't think there's a better character in the ensemble than Hobbs, but only when he's part of the ensemble. I don't think Hobbs and Shaw works where he's the star, but where he's part of the texture of this larger group of weirdos. He sings in a way that I think really, really makes the best possible use of his abilities as an actor. And I hope he's realized that. And I hope that this is a chance for him to, you know, put aside the ego that led the Black Adam and realizing that maybe plugging his nose and working with Vin Diesel, it's the best way to, you know, for the audience to keep smelling what The Rock is cooking, not to break out his little catchphrase.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like, I hated Hobbs and Shaw. I think it's, I don't know, probably the worst Fast and Furious movie of the whole thing. So I'm not particularly like upset that Jason Statham, who I love and appreciate and really like as a performer and a presence, I'm not like particularly sad that he's not mentioned here, because I don't particularly like the chemistry that those two characters had in that film.
Oh, it's terrible.
So like they were constantly like just making quote unquote jokes all the time and like bickering, and it just was not nearly as amusing as I think everybody who made the movie hoped it would be. So yeah, I think it's much cleaner to just have Hobbs come back. And like, maybe the thing that I'm so curious about is like, where does this movie take place on the timeline? When are we going to see this compared to what they're calling, or what somebody is calling, Fast X Part 2, which I think you mentioned, like, you really hope that that ends up being the final name, just because the naming convention of this particular franchise is so insane.
Fast 12 minus 1, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I think Fast 10 Part 2 is scheduled to come out in 2025. So, like, could they make this standalone movie in between now and then and get it out in theaters and then still have The Rock have enough time to be a major presence in Fast 10 Part 2? Or do you think that they will finish the franchise and then, or like, the main, you know, quote-unquote saga movies, and then the spinoff will come out after that will fill in the gaps of what happened between Fast X and Fast X Part 2. I mean, that would be like a totally bonkers narrative choice, but this franchise has certainly shown that it can go back in time and fill in gaps before. So what do you think about that?
I mean, that's really be anticlimactic. I mean, it makes sense for it to come out first, because when we get spoilers for Fast X, but in the credit scene, The Rock is, you know, dressed in military gear. He's leading a team through a mansion looking for Dante. And the big question is, how does he get here? You know, why is he hunting for him? Why is he with this team? Why is there a vendetta here? What's bringing these two together?
Yeah.
And I think an action movie where The Rock's daughter is kidnapped, Hobbs' daughter is kidnapped or something like that, and he's searching for Dante, who did it, that's a compelling enough reason to bring those two together and lead to him and maybe fighting another bad guy, which leads to him in that mansion, leads to that stinger, leads to him re-entering the fray in Fast X Part 2. But I don't see how that story is satisfying. Presumably Dante gets defeated, dies, or joins the family in Fast X Part 2. Yeah. So the question is, would audiences want to see that story after they've seen the conclusion of Jason Momoa's character? I think the answer is no. So I
have a pitch for you, Jacob.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready for this? So I think the only way this works in that formulation, where like Fast X Part 2 comes out and then this spinoff comes out, is if the first half of the spinoff is what happens before Part 2, and then the back half continues the story beyond where the saga officially ends, which, again, would be like so chaotic and so ridiculous, but very much in line with the history of this franchise. So I kind of hope that that actually happens. I'm not sure if they'll go that far.
Are you pitching this to be the Bourne ultimatum?
Yes. Yeah, actually. Yeah, I think so. Or maybe a little bit of Bourne Legacy in there too. but yeah, I think that would be like super entertaining. So, and it could potentially lead to, you know, even more spinoffs, which is like what they're talking about doing with this franchise now. So like, I could see a world in which this fills in that gap, sort of picks up the baton and takes it past the end point of this saga franchise, and then like introduces other characters that could then spin off into their own projects or something from there. So Yeah, I guess we'll just have to see. But do you have any, like, do you have a preference, Jacob, of like what you, how you want to see this franchise end?
Oof, it's a good question. I want it to end with Jason Momoa's corpse strapped up around the table in Dom's yard as everybody force feeds him a Corona, saying, "See, he's family too. He's family too. We made it, guys. We made it. Everyone's family." And they cheer, and that's the end of the movie.
Ooh, dark, dark, Jacob, dark stuff. What a way to go out for Slash Film Daily. That's a great end cap for us, I think.
But we're welcoming in the Slash Film Show.
So. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, yes, you can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Yeah, the Slash Film Show, starting next week, will be published twice a week, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please subscribe to our newsletter, send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Tell your friends, spread the word. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.